Good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, folks, how does it feel to live in a banana republic when you've got the sitting president ordering armed FBI agents to raid the home of the past president? That's what you find in a banana republic. Not walk up and knock on the door and say, we'd like to look for these documents. Oh no, machine gun toting FBI agents conducted a full-scale raid. I'm sure they're hoping he would resist and they could shoot him. That's about the only way that I can see that the current office holder can defeat him if he runs again. It's just absolutely insane, the things that this man is doing in the name of, frankly, in the name of the Democratic Party. Not doing it in the name of the country. Oh no, it's to keep the power for the Democrats. Well, today's August the 10th, 222nd day of the year. 143 days remain till the year is over with, assuming we still have a country by that time. In 654, Pope Eugene I elected to succeed Martinus I. 955, Battle of Lechfield. Otto I, Holy Roman Emperor, defeats the Magars, ending 50 years of Magar invasion of the West. 991, Battle of Maldon. The English, led by Brynoth, Earldom of Essex, are defeated by a band of inland raiding Vikings near Maldon in Essex. In 1030, the Battle of Azaz ends with a humiliating retreat by the Byzantine Emperor, Romanos III Argaios, against the Bertucid rulers of Aleppo. The retreat degenerates into a full-scale rout in which Romanos himself barely escapes being captured. 1270, Yukuno Amlak takes the imperial throne of Ethiopia, restoring the Solomonic dynasty to power after 100-year Zagwe in Tarragon. 1316, the Second Battle of Athenry takes place near Athenry during the Bruce campaign in Ireland. 1346, James Ferrer sets out for Majorca for the River of Gold, the Senegal River. 1512, the Naval Battle of St. Matthew during the War of the League of Cambrai sees the simultaneous destruction of the Breton ship La Cordierie and the English ship the Regent. 1519, Ferdinand Magellan's five ships set sail from Seville to circumnavigate the globe. The Basque second-in-command, Juan Sebastian Elcano, will complete the expedition after Magellan's death in the Philippines. 1557, the Battle of St. Quentin, Spanish victory over the French in the Italian War of 1551 to 1559. 1585, the Treaty of Nonsuch, signed by Elizabeth I of England and the Dutch rebels. 1628, the Swedish warship Vasa sinks in the Stockholm harbor after only about 20 minutes of her maiden voyage. 1641, the Treaty of London between England and Scotland ends the Bishop War. It's signed on this date. 1675, the foundation stone of the Royal Greenwich Observatory in London, England is laid. 1680, the Pueblo Revolt begins in New Mexico. Chase the Spanish all the way back into, back down here where I'm at. 1741, King Marthanda Varma of Travancore defeats the Dutch East India Company at the Battle of Colchel, effectively bringing about the end of the Dutch colonial rule in India. 1755, under the direction of Charles Lawrence, the British began to forcibly deport the Acadians from Nova Scotia to the 13 colonies in France. 1776, American Revolutionary War, word of the United States Declaration of Independence, reaches London on this date. 1792, the French Revolution. Storming of the Tuileries Palace, the 16th of France is arrested and taken into custody as Swiss guards and massacred by the Parisian mob. That's basically what happened with the raid on Trump's home. 1793, the Musée du Louvre is officially opened in Paris, France. 1809, Quito, now the capital of Ecuador, declares independence from Spain. The rebellion to be crushed August 2, 1810. 1813, Instituto Nacional is founded by the Chilean patriot José Miguel Carrera. It's Chile's oldest and most prestigious school. The motto is Labor Omnia Vincit, which means work conquers all things. That's not really true. It's the money you get for the work that conquers all things. 1821, Missouri is admitted as the 24th U.S. state. 1844, German astronomer Friedrich Wilhelm Bessel deduced from the motion of the brightest star Sirius that had an unseen companion. 1846, the Smithsonian Institution is chartered by the U.S. Congress after James Smithson donates $500,000. Smithson never set foot in this country. It's interesting he donated it. 1856, the last island hurricane strikes Louisiana, resulting in over 200 deaths. 1861, American Civil War, Battle of Wilson's Creek. A mixed force of Confederate, Missouri State Guards, and Arkansas State troops defeat outnumbered, attacking Union forces in the southwestern part of the state. 1864, after Uruguay's governing Blanco Party refuses Brazil's demands, José Antonio Saravia announces the Brazilian military will begin reprisals, beginning the Uruguayan War. 1897, German chemist Felix Hoffmann discovers an improved way of synthesizing acetylsalicylic acid, which is we know as aspirin. 1900, Dwight F. Davis and Holcomb Ward win the first Davis Cup over Englishman E.D. Black and H.R. Barrett. 1901, U.S. Steel recognition strike by the Amalgamated Association of Iron and Steel Workers begins. 1904, Russo-Japanese War, the Battle of the Yellow Sea between the Russians and the Japanese battleship fleets takes place. 1905, Russo-Japanese War. Peace negotiations began in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. 1913, Second Balkan War. Delegates from Bulgaria, Romania, Serbia, Montenegro, and Greece signed the Treaty of Bucharest, ending the war. 1920, World War I. Ottoman Sultan Mehmed VI's representatives signed the Treaty of Sevres, which divides up the Ottoman Empire between the Allies. 1932, a 5.1 kilogram, that's 11 pound, chondrite-type meteorite breaks into at least seven pieces and lands near the town of Archie in Cass County, Missouri. 1936, Spanish Civil War. The Regional Defense Council of Aragon is dissolved by the Spanish Republic. 1944, World War II. The Battle of Guam comes to an effective end. Also in 1944, World War II, the Battle of Narva ends with a decisive and defensive German victory. 1948, Candid Camera makes its television debut after being on radio for a year as Candid Microphone. 1949, an amendment to the National Security Act of 1947 enhances the authority of the U.S. Secretary of Defense over the Army, Navy, and Air Force and replaces the National Military Establishment with the Department of Defense. 1953, First Indochina War. French Union withdraws its forces from Operation Camargue against the Viet Minh in Central Vietnam. 1954, in Messina, New York, the groundbreaking ceremony for the St. Lawrence Seaway is held. 1961, Vietnam War. U.S. Army begins Operation Ranch Hands, spraying an estimated 20 million U.S. gallons of defoliants and herbicides over rural areas of South Vietnam in an attempt to deprive the Viet Cong of food and vegetation cover. Most of that spraying was Agent Orange. 1966, the Heron Road Bridge collapses while being built, killing nine workers in the deadliest construction accident in both Ottawa and Ontario. 1969, a day after murdering Sharon Tate and four others, members of Charles Manson's cult, Carolino and Rosemary LaBianca. 1971, the Society for American Baseball Research is founded in Cooperstown, New York. 1977, in Yonkers, New York, 24-year-old postal employee David Berkowitz, also known as the Son of Sam, is arrested for a series of killings in New York City over a period of a year. Supposedly, Sam was his neighbor's dog who talked to him telepathically. But in actuality, there's evidence that he was a member of an organized serial killing group. 1978, three members of the Urich family are killed in an accident. This leads to the Ford Pinto litigation. 1981, murder of Adam Walsh. The head of John Walsh's son is found. This inspires the creation of the television series America's Most Wanted and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. 1988, Japanese-American internment. President Reagan signs the Civil Liberties Act of 1988, providing $20,000 payments to Japanese-Americans who were either interned in or relocated by the U.S. during World War II. We can't do enough for anybody not born here. If you're born here, screw you and the horse you rode in on. I've been trying to get the FBI to look into local corruption, and they ignore me, but they'll go defend Hunter Biden. They'll raid Mar-a-Lago. Anything and everything. But corruption affects a disabled veteran? They could care less. They think it's funny. 1990, the Magellan space probe reaches Venus. 1993, two earthquakes affect New Zealand, a 7.0 shock. Intensity 6, which is considered strong in the South Island, was followed 9 hours later by a 6.4 event, which is intensity 7, very strong, in the North Island. 1995, Oklahoma City bombing. Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols are indicted for the bombing. Michael Fortier pleads guilty in a plea bargain for his testimony. 1997, 16 people are killed when Formosa Airlines Flight 7601 crashes near Baguio Airport in the Matsu Islands of Taiwan. 1998, His Royal Highness Prince Ali Mutubi Billah is proclaimed the Crown Prince of Brunei with a royal proclamation. 1998, Los Angeles Jewish Community Center shooting. 2001, the 2001 Angola train attack occurred, causing 252 deaths. 2001, the space shuttle program. Discovery is launched on STS-105 to the International Space Station, carrying the astronauts of Expedition 3 to replace the crew of Expedition 2. 2003, the Okinawa Urban Monorails opened in Naha in Okinawa. 2009, 20 people are killed in Handlova, Trenčín region in the deadliest mining disaster in Slovakia's history. 2012, the Marikana massacre begins near Rustenburg in South Africa, resulting in the death of 47 people. 2014, 40 people are killed when Stephen Sepahan Airlines Flight 5915 crashes in Tehran's Mehrabad International Airport. 2018, Horizon Air employee Richard Russell hijacks and performs an unauthorized takeoff on a Horizon Air Bombardier Dash 8 Q400 plane at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport in Washington, flying it for more than an hour before crashing the plane and killing himself on Ketron Island in Puget Sound. 2018, an anti-government rally turns into a riot when members of the Romanian gendarme attacked the 100,000 people protesting in front of the Victoria Palace, leading to 452 recorded injuries. The authorities allege the crowd was infiltrated by hooligans who began attacking law enforcement officials. 2019, 32 are killed and 1 million are evacuated as Typhoon Lakima makes landfall near Zhejiang, China. It caused flooding in the Philippines earlier. And in 2020, derecho in Iowa becomes the most costly thunderstorm disaster in U.S. history. Well, a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. I mean a lot. And holidays and observances, Argentine Air Force Day in Argentina.
Christian Feast Day, Bessus Blaine in the Roman Catholic Church, Geraint of Dumnonia, Lawrence of Rome, Nicola Saggio, Noester Signore del Buen Successo di Paraque, patroness of Baranque in the Philippines. Declaration of Independence of Quito, proclaimed independence from Spain August 10th, 1809. They finally got their independence May 24th, 1822 at the Battle of Pichincha in Ecuador. International Biodiesel Day and National Veterans Day in Indonesia. All right, let's see what else there is out there. That's not it. In 612 BC, the killing of Sennacherib, king of the Assyrian Empire, and the destruction of Nineveh took place on this day in 612 BC. In the year 70, the second temple in Jerusalem set on fire by the Roman army under Titus during the capture of the city. 610 in Islam, this is the traditional date of the Layat al-Qadr, when Muhammad began to receive the Quran. 843, the Treaty of Verdun. Brothers Lotharius I, Louis the German, and Charles the Bald divide France. 991, the Battle of Maldon in England. The English, led by Brynhild, confront a band of inland raiding Vikings. The English are defeated, and the story is immortalized in a well-known poem. 1304, the Battle of Zurich Sea. The Dutch and French fleet beat the Flemish fleet. 1346, about James Ferrer in 1346, setting sail to find the legendary River of Gold along the West African coast, he vanished completely. Not a single trace was found. 1461, Alfonso Espina, Bishop of Osma, urges an Inquisition to be established in Spain. 1497, explorer John Cabot tells King Henry VII of his trip to Asia. 1500, Portuguese sea captain Diego Diaz is the first European to sight Madagascar. 1511, Portuguese troops occupy parts of Malacca. 1512, the Battle of St. Matthew, also called the Battle of Brest. An English fleet of 25 ships commanded by Sir Edward Howard meets a Franco-Breton fleet of 22 ships commanded by René de Clermont. 1557, the Battle of St. Quentin in Picardy. Lemerald, Count of Egmont, and Philibert, the Duke of Savoy, beat the Duke of Montmorency in France. 1566, the Protestant iconoclasm, Beldenstein, begins in European Low Countries. 1622, John Mason and Fernando Jorge, or Georges, depending on how you pronounce it, receive a land patent for the province of Maine. 1627, Cardinal Richelieu begins the siege of La Rochelle in France. 1659, Mughal Emperor Aurangzeb has his brother and competitor for the throne, Dara Sukho, executed on religious grounds. God wants you to die. 1664, Austria and the Ottoman Empire signed the Peace of Vespar. 1675, Portuguese Jewish synagogue is opened in Amsterdam. 1678, Netherlands and France signed the peace treaty in Nijmegen. 1682, a medicine man, Pope, leads the Pueblo Rebellion against Spanish colonizers in New Mexico, killing 400 and driving out another 2,000. 1743 saw the earliest recorded prize fighting rules formulated. 1759, Carlos III is crowned King of Spain. 1774, the first Suriname newspaper, the First Wednesday Suriname, begins publishing. 1792, a large-scale insurrection against the French monarchy occurs in Paris. 1792, papers from the Tuileries Palace proving that the Comte de Mirabeau had secret dealings with the court are revealed. He was a revolutionary and a politician, but actually he hedged his bets. He was working with both sides. 1822, Antioch, Syria, hit by an earthquake. About 20,000 people die. 1827, race riots in Cincinnati. Over 1,000 black citizens leave for Canada. 1831, a hurricane hits Barbados. About 1,500 die. 1833, Chicago incorporates as a village of about 200 people. 1835, a mob of whites and using teams of oxen pull a black school to a swamp out of Canaan, New Hampshire. 1856, a hurricane washes away 200 to 300 revelers at the last island, Louisiana. 1862, the Battle of the Nueces River in Texas. 1869, O.B. Brown patents a moving picture projector. 1877, at the Big Hole River, Colonel John Gibbon murders Nez Perce Indians. You know, there were lunatics on both sides. 1887, an excursion train crashes in Chatsworth, Illinois, kills over 100. 1889, Dan Rylands patents the screw cap, which made wine drinkers happy the world over. 1893, the Chinese were deported from San Francisco under the Chinese Exclusion Act. That was supposed to be a 10-year temporary act that lasted till 1943. 1893, on this date, Rudolf Diesel's prime model internal combustion engine, a single 10-foot iron cylinder with a flywheel at its base, ran on its own power for the first time in Augsburg, Germany. 1897, Automobile Club of Great Britain was established on this date. It's now the Royal Automobile Club. 1904, Angelo Giuseppe Roncalli, the future Pope John the 23rd, became a priest on this date. 1904, Dutch newspaper Volk fires gay journalist Jacob de Kock. 1904, Battle of the Yellow Sea, the Japanese fleet prevented the Russians from breaking out of Port Arthur. 1911, a Parliament Act reduces the power of the UK's House of Lords. 1914, a German battlecruiser Goeben reaches the Dardanelles in Turkey, joins Germany. 1914, World War I, the French fall back at Alsace. 1916, the Turks annex the Persian city Hamadan from Russia. 1920, the Allies recognized Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Romania. 1920, the Turkish government announces its claim to Israel, recognizing the British mandate. 1921, FDR was stricken with a paralytic illness at his summer home on Canadian Island in Campobello. At the time, it was thought to be polio, but it could have been Guillain-Barré syndrome. 1936, first time the Olympic cycling road race is conducted as a mass start event with Frenchman Robert Charpentier and Guy Lependi taking gold and silver, France winning the team gold medal. 1940, the Dutch Prince Bernhard Fund forms. 1942, 200 Jews escape Mir Ghetto in Poland. 1943, a Dutch submarine attacks Hertenbist Island in northwest Bali. 43, Adolf Hitler watches the lynching of Allied pilots. 1944, the Battle of Guam ends. U.S. troops recapture Guam from the Japanese. 1945, Japan announces its willingness to surrender to allies, provided Emperor Hirohito's status remains unchanged. He was descended from the gods, don't you know? Well, on that note, we've ended this little segment. You know, the interesting thing about history. The winners write history. It's not necessarily the truth. It's how the winners perceive it. Now, we were talking about the death of some other witnesses to the Kennedy assassination and the ongoing cleanup that took place. Irv Kupchinet, whose daughter mysteriously died, knew Jack Ruby very well. Worked closely with Jimmy Colitz, one of Ruby's oldest and closest Chicago friends. We're talking about the Chicago mob, don't you know? And shortly after Ruby killed Oswald, Irv Kupchinet telephoned mob-connected Paul Red Dorfman in Palm Springs to ask him questions about Ruby's connections to the mob. Now, Kupchinet developed a reputation for getting to the facts and getting them out to the people. And Chicago loved him for it. He had the most popular column in the paper. In fact, a huge bronze statue of Irv Kupchinet welcomes everybody to Chicago. And he was clearly not one to back off from a story. That was part of his legend. So that professional toughness was part of his reputation, a component of his popularity, but that changed after Ruby shot Oswald and his daughter died. Now it's pretty clear, looking at the evidence, she was murdered. After her death, and for the rest of his life, it seemed that like a prominent yet curious newspaper gossip was the type of behavior he demonstrated. He behaved as if he was under control or by intimidation or some other cohesive influence. Now, Karen, that was the daughter, was in Palm Springs the same weekend that Paul Dorfman was there. She'd gone with friends to sort of escape the madness following the death of Kennedy. And it turns out that on the assassination weekend, Karen, with friends and mobster Paul Dorfman, were both in Palm Springs. Now, Irv Kupchinet had called Dorfman so quickly after Ruby shot Oswald that Dorfman wasn't even aware yet that it happened. And he even doubted Kupchinet's information. In fact, his comment was Sparky would never do that. Sparky was his name for Jack Ruby. In fact, that was the mob's nickname for Ruby. He said, Sparky's the last guy you'd expect to do that. He's a nebbish sort of guy. And it appears, looking at the evidence, that Dorfman was unnerved a bit by Kupchinek's tenacity and eagerness to get to the story. And possibly Dorfman saw his daughter in Palm Springs that weekend. So that's how the idea seemed to have come about, to keep Kupchinet away from Ruby in the Chicago angle of the assassination. That he couldn't very well kill the reporter himself. But to kill his daughter, whomever Chicagoan knew, would take away any interest he might have in following up on Ruby. He'd be in no condition to investigate the Chicago mob. And possibly a plan was afoot to commit an outrageous crime in Chicago sometime after the assassination to get everybody's attention off the mob. Now, if you look at the context of the story that appeared in the Chicago Tribune, the shock crime theory does make a lot of sense. Just prior to his murder, a casino owner and well-connected mobster Jack Zanghetti told friends quite specifically a man named Jack Ruby is going to kill Oswald. And then Frank Sinatra's son is going to be kidnapped to take attention away from what was going on. And both of these events transpired precisely as Zanghetti predicted. And then, of course, shortly after that, Zanghetti himself was found murdered. Then we've got the deathbed confession by longtime mob hitman Frank the Irishman Sharon. It appeared in a book called I Heard You Paint Houses. Sharon said everybody high up in the mob, and Sharon was very, very close with Russell Bufalino, Jimmy Hoffa, and some of the others, knew that Ruby screwed up on November 22nd, and that's why he personally got the assignment to take care of Oswald. Oswald was supposed to die in jail. In fact, he was supposed to have had suicide by cop by pulling his gun at the theater, but instead of shooting him, they just overwhelmed him, and it turned out the gun had a faulty firing pin anyway. Giancano's family stated the same thing in Double Cross. According to Sharon, Jack Ruby's cops were supposed to take care of Oswald, but Ruby bungled it. And if he didn't take care of Oswald, what do you think they'd have done to him? They'd have put him up on a meat hook. That was something the Chicago mob did periodically, quite infamously, to a loan shark named Action Jackson, who was suspected of talking to the FBI. It was a vicious torture killing, one that everybody in Chicago knew about. Now, Kupchinet was not only on a first-name basis with leaders of the Chicago mob, but he traveled in the same social circles. His close friend was mob lawyer Sidney Korshak, who probably would have had a lot of knowledge about Ruby. Now, he turned down the mob's offer to investigate his daughter's death on behalf of the family, always assuming he knew who did it and that it wasn't a suicide. And he was so adamant about leaving it all alone that friends knew well that there was it was a subject they couldn't broach with him. Kupchinet quite obviously backed off from his typically thorough investigative reporting concerning Ruby's connections to the Chicago mob and the killing of Oswald. Others, such as Dartha Kilgallen, found it so obvious and abhorrent that they vowed to keep investigating it to the end. A lot of folks at least suspected that the Sinatra Jr. kidnapping had been staged in some way. They were much the same as the obvious suspicions of something being rotten in Denmark when they witnessed how easily Ruby got to Oswald to shoot him on live TV while all the Dallas police stood around and watched. Now, whether or not it was actually a planned shock crime to divert attention away from Jack Ruby's mafia connections, it did have that effect. Karen Kupchinik's death completely took over the headlines, was the primary topic of conversation for quite some time after that. And exactly as predicted, Frank Sinatra's son was kidnapped December 8, 1963, before Karen's murder completely faded from the headlines. Now, Irv Kupchinik was the most popular man in Chicago, but the mob may have killed his daughter. Best friend was Sidney Korshak, a mafia lawyer who was investigated so many times, but they never found anything that he had done that was illegal. And if a hit came from Chicago, he'd be the man to know about it. He met Irv at the airport and later identified the remains of Irv's daughter. And then Frank Sinatra Jr.'s son was kidnapped. And who worked harder to get Kennedy in as president than Sinatra? That was another smokescreen, so to speak. If it was a shock crime, it worked. Karen's death took over the headlines, and especially in Chicago, any focus that would have been placed on Jack Ruby's Chicago mob connections went away. There's also no reason that Karen's family couldn't have had a second, more professional autopsy done. With their wealth and influence, that could have been easily accomplished. With the obviously totally botched first autopsy performed by a man who himself had broken the necks of bodies entrusted to his care, and with all the rape murder accusations swirling around the case, why was a second professional autopsy not performed? Now, based on the evidentiary indications, there were a number of conclusions that were drawn by investigators. The necks of other corpses were apparently broken by the mentally disturbed medical examiner, initially making the ruling of murder seem very open to scrutiny. And many have noted that Karen may have committed suicide. She was depressed. There was a note left behind, and friends reported she had been deeply disturbed and overwhelmed by events. It looked like she may have taken the contents of the empty pill bottle that was found. But 100 pills? Please. But the fact she dried off with a towel after taking a shower and neglected to put on a bathrobe, which she had laid out before her shower, is an indication of foul play, not suicide. Clearly, she died very quickly. She was nude on her couch. And as far as anybody knows, nobody ever formally apologized to actor Andrew Prine for ruining a large portion of his life with false accusations of murder. Now, a few things did come to light in the aftermath of Karen's murder. The mystery call for telling the assassination of President Kennedy wasn't actually placed by Karen. The real story is that everything links back to Chicago and Jack Ruby. Therefore, one theory comes out of all this. Whatever Karen's personal problems were, the Chicago mob ended them and did so as a vehicle for which to attempt to draw attention away from the recently nationally televised assassination of the president's killer committed by Chicago mob's Jack Ruby. That is the only killing where we have no doubt who did it. But it did serve a purpose, planned or otherwise, at least in Chicago, where the Kupchinits were like a royal family. And there's a large amount of circumstantial evidence that supports that thesis. Now, Jack Ruby was closely affiliated with the Chicago Boys and was soon to murder Oswald right in the middle of a police station and on national TV. The heat on Chicago was already tremendous and was expected to increase exponentially very quickly. Had there been any indication of mob involvement, Bobby Kennedy would have come down their throats like you wouldn't believe. But with all the shock crimes going on, he couldn't get it done. Herb Kupchinik knew Ruby and worked closely with Jimmy Colts, one of Ruby's oldest and closest Chicago friends. As a Chicago celebrity, Kupchinik ran in the same circles as the leaders of the mob, knew him, was friendly with him, and got information from him. His good friend was the elite mob attorney Sidney Korshak. If you want to know about Korshak, read the book Super Mob. So he would have known about Jack Ruby's affiliation with the Boys, as they were called, and might have been inclined to report precisely that. But at the end of the day, when push came to shove, he was a solid guy and an excellent reporter, and he got to the bottom of anything he investigated. Unlike fellow columnist Arthur Kilgallen, who vowed publicly to get to the truth and uncover the obvious conspiracy in Ruby's silencing of Oswald, Kupchinet stayed silent on the subject, never publicly divulging the secret, but pertinent knowledge of Ruby's strong linkage to the Chicago mob. It's worth noting from a standpoint of scientific logic that simply because the story about Karen making the mystery phone call is false, that doesn't negate the possibility her death is related to the Jack Ruby Chicago mob connection. There's no doubt, after all is said and done, that she was in all likelihood murdered. But a major effort was made to cover it up. Now, how the story got started about her making the phone call and telling an operator that Kennedy's going to be assassinated is anybody's guess. But she was peripherally related, especially through the use of her death as a shock crime. Now, the next witness that mysteriously died is Grant Stockdale. Now, a lot of the names I'll be mentioning, you've probably not heard before. Now, Stockdale is a wheeler dealer in the highest echelon to the Democratic Party. Former ambassador to Ireland, close friend of John Kennedy. He died when he fell or was pushed from his office window on the 13th floor of the DuPont building in Midtown Miami. Officially, he committed suicide. In actuality, his behavior that morning was normal. Came into his office for work on a Monday morning, very pleasant, conversed amiably, didn't seem suicidal. Police put the time of the death at 10:17 a.m. Only other person in the office at that time would have been his killer, who due to circumstantial evidence could easily have entered the office without anybody seeing him. No suicide note was found. He was apparently mixed up in some very serious political shenanigans. Now, he was a big wheel in the Democratic Party and a person of considerable influence in Washington. He was also involved in the corruption around the Bobby Baker scandal. And he was involved in matters related to another brewing cauldron of corruption involving the $7 billion F-111 contract to Texas General Dynamics Corporation. Both of these scandals threatened to ruin Lyndon, I'm going to go with King Johnson politically. And at the time he's becoming president, certainly he didn't want these things to become a topic of discussion. Now, the official line was that Stockdale committed suicide because he was depressed about the murder of his friend, JFK. And that seems very weak. As one author noted, hard-headed businessman, and Stockdale was certainly that, don't kill themselves because a friend's been murdered, even if that friend is the president of the United States. Now, research has established on November 26, 1963, Stockdale flew to Washington, D.C. and met with JFK's brothers, Robert and Edward Kennedy. Only when he got back, he told several of his friends the world was closing in. December 1, 1963, he talked to his attorney, William Freights. He summarized their conversation by saying he started talking, didn't make much sense. He said something about those guys trying to get him. Then he started talking about the assassination. Now, this was the day before he allegedly fell or was pushed from his office window. Stockdale's daughter stated publicly her father knew he was being followed. He told her mother that some people are out to get him, that she herself had an attempt on her life several days after her father's funeral, and she believed the attempt on her life was a way to coerce her mother into remaining silent, which actually worked. For these reasons, a number of researchers have speculated Stockdale figured out that an anti-Castro intelligence operation had been hijacked and turned against Kennedy instead. And for that reason, Stockdale had to be removed. Now, in addition to being a friend of Kennedy and a former ambassador, he was also friends with U.S. Senator George Smathers of Florida, who was another close friend of Kennedy's. In fact, Kennedy socialized with Florida Senator Smathers. And spent time at Stockdale's home in Coral Gables. Stockdale headed the Kennedy campaign in Florida, and after JFK won the Democratic nomination for president, Stockdale was the Kennedy campaign finance chairman for 11 southern states. So this was a man who knew his way around, was very well connected, and had the reputation as a very tough politician and businessman. By all accounts, he was one tough cookie. So it seems a little odd that being depressed over Kennedy's death would be a sufficient cause for Stockdale to jump to his death out of his office window without even leaving a note for his wife, five children, mother, and friends. A researcher by the name of Adele Edison investigated the evidence and came up with some conclusions. According to what she wrote, at 10 a.m. on Monday, December 2nd, 1963, Grant Stockdale came to his office on the 13th floor of the Alfred I. DuPont building on Flagler Street in Miami. His secretary, Laverne Weingartner, who usually opened the office, wasn't there, but at a dentist office. Wouldn't get there until 10:30. So Stockdale went into a law office across the hall from his own and asked Ms. Mary Ruth Hauser how he could get a key to unlock his office door. So she offered to call the building manager to send somebody to open it. She said he followed me into my office. I stood there where I called down for a key. He was very calm. He didn't seem at all upset. Somehow the subject of the president's death came up, and he said he was in his office when his wife called to tell him the president had been shot. Stockdale and Ms. Hauser were still talking when somebody came to unlock his own door. She started to follow him across the hall, but just then her office phone started ringing, and she stopped to answer it. She said it couldn't have been 5 minutes later. There was this terrible thud. I wonder if I'd gone right behind him, what would have happened? Now, all the people who saw and spoke to Stockdale on his way to work said he was in good spirits, waving, saying hello, stopped for a shoe shine, spoke to the elevator operator, exchanged words with the parking garage attendant. That just doesn't sound like a suicidal individual. And in the one newspaper report states Miss Stockdale had urged her husband to seek help for his depression after the assassination. But she called the doctor on Monday to inform him he was so much better, and Monday's the same day he allegedly committed suicide. Grant Stockdale's own daughter, Ann Stockdale, came up with some information concerning her father's murder. She said, "One thing I do know is that Kennedy asked Daddy to go to Air Force Base south of Miami to see if bombs were being loaded on the planes. Kennedy had ordered the Air Force to stand down on bombing to support the Bay of Pigs. Bombs were being loaded on the planes. I believe one of the reasons her father was killed is because he knew the gun was being run by the military-industrial complex." Now, the military complex don't want the American people to realize that they were calling the shots. Stockdale knew he was being followed, and he told his wife that they were going to get him, and they did. There was an attempt on the daughter's life several days after the funeral, and apparently that was a scare tactic to silence the mother. For example, the message was, if you speak about anything, your kids are dead. And it did work. Now, based on the evidence or evidentiary indications, there are a number of conclusions you can draw from this particular death. In simple facts about the victim, he was an intimate friend of Kennedy, had a reputation as a tough businessman, known to be well-connected in Washington, privy to high-level information, and very capable of connecting the dots. Was involved in two major scandals that were brewing that had seriously threatened the entire political career of the new president, Lyndon, I'm going to be King Johnson. Didn't leave a suicide note or any other indications he was going to kill himself. Confided to friends and his attorney on the day before his death, people were trying to get him, and it was linked to the assassination. So in all likelihood, we're looking at another murder. Now we got two reporters. Jim Koeth, who died September 21st, 1964, and Bill Hunter. Now, Koeth died from a karate chop to the neck, and Hunter was shot by a policeman. The official verdict, Koeth surprised a burglar, and the burglar killed him. End of story. Hunter was said to be an accidental shooting. Now, in actuality, Koth had been putting together notes for a book he planned to do, or at least a series of stories about the Kennedy assassination, and all his notes disappeared. Hunter, in a bizarre event, a policeman was reported playing around, quick-drawing his weapon from its holster. And he drew and pointed a gun at Hunter, went off and killed him. Koth had come out of the shower in his bathroom, was killed by a karate chop to the neck. It was a young reporter for the Dallas Times-Herald who was actively investigating the assassination of Kennedy and reported he was in the process of writing a book. In an occurrence that continued repeating well beyond the odds of probability, his notes on the assassination that he put together for his book vanished. Never found. Now, robbery appeared to be the motive, although Koth's parents believed he was killed for other reasons. Hoover ransacked his apartment, they pointed out, was careful to remove his notes for the book he was preparing in collaboration with two other journalists on the Kennedy assassination. He was one of the few reporters who gained access to Ruby's apartment on the night of the same day that Ruby shot Oswald. Another reporter present in Ruby's apartment that night was Bill Hunter, and both died. Now, his death was ruled to be accidental. Hunter had been a newspaper reporter, had worked for the Long Beach Independent Press. Telegram was covering the assassination story. Hunter had come out to Dallas to work on the story and met up with Jim Koth, an old friend with whom he'd worked before. It wasn't known if the two discovered anything noteworthy in Ruby's Dallas apartment, and the police had already been there earlier that day, but they didn't really care. But it's at least a bizarre coincidence. Both reporters who were working on the assassination story, both examining the story of Jack Ruby shooting Oswald, both were in Ruby's apartment on the night of the same day he murdered Oswald, and both were shortly after that murdered. Bill Hunter was accidentally shot by a policeman in a California police station. Now, there were two officers actually involved in the incident. They were given sentenced to 3 years probation. Author Bill Sloan talked about the event. He said about 2 in the morning on April 23rd, 1964, Hunter was sitting at his desk in the press room of the Long Beach Police Station reading a mystery novel called Stop This Man, and two detectives, both of whom have described as friends of Hunter, came into the room. Now, initially, there was a great deal of confusion over exactly what happened. One officer first quoted as saying he dropped his gun, causing it to discharge as it hit the floor. Later on, he changed his story to say he and the other detective were engaged in horseplay with their loaded weapons when the tragedy occurred. Whatever may have been the case, a single shot was fired, hitting Hunter where he sat. The autopsy later showed a .38 caliber bullet went right through Hunter's heart. He died instantly without ever moving or saying a word. Now, there was a number of concerns about whether or not that story might get changed as well. Bill Shelton said, my boss called me at 2 in the morning and told me Bill Hunter had been shot. He wasn't satisfied with the story. The cop dropped his gun. As it turned out, that wasn't what happened at all. Newspaper charged the police with covering up the facts in the case, which Long Beach Police Chief William Mooney denied, of course. But the city editor at the Long Beach newspaper Hunter worked at stated he still wasn't satisfied with the official verdict. When asked if he thought there was a connection between Hunter's death and a JFK assassination, he declined to comment, but he said, I'd believe anything. You can call it a coincidence if you want to, but as we covered mathematically at the beginning of this series of articles, there comes a point when coincidence occurs so frequently it actually becomes numerically prohibitive. The brother of that same city editor said, but I'd believe anything, was one of many Dallas news reporters who'd covered the assassination and left the news profession. Of those many reporters, one who'd been asked to resign said it looked like a studied effort to remove all the knowledgeable newsmen who covered the assassination. So both Hunter and Koth had been at Jack Ruby's Dallas apartment the same day that Ruby shot Oswald. They were there with George Senator, Ruby's roommate, who blatantly perjured himself in testimony to the Warren Commission, stating he had no memory of the event. Ruby's attorney, Tom Howard, who was the other person at Ruby's apartment. In fact, it was Tom Howard who put forward the preposterous story about Ruby shot Oswald. That being because he couldn't bear the idea the presidents would have been subjected to testifying at the trial of Oswald. November 24, 1963, Bill Hunter and Jim Coath interviewed George Senator. Also, there was the attorney, Tom Howard. Earlier that day, Senator and Howard both visited Ruby in jail. That evening, Senator arranged for Coath, Hunter, and Howard to search Ruby's apartment. It would seem something of importance had transpired to Jack Ruby's apartment that evening because strange events followed that visit. George Senator lied about the meeting having ever taken place. Coath was karate chopped to death and his JFK notes vanished. Hunter was shot because a cop played around and pointed a loaded gun at him, which cops don't routinely do. And Tom Howard, the fourth and last person who was at Ruby's apartment that night, also died of a heart attack March 27, 1965. He was just 48 years old. Well, on that note, we come to the end of today's show. We'll talk more about some of the mysterious deaths around the Kennedy assassination in our next show. Until then, Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.